Blog Talk Radio.
Milk or spookymilk.games, and that is who I am. So we are going to talk about July 13th, 2021. We watched some NXT. It was good. It's just going to be the two of us tonight. Tom is taking the night off. We were going to do a rotating thing, sort of. And he has bailed tonight. So we are going to talk NXT and take your calls. You can call us at 515-605-9345 or email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Let's talk main event, and then we will go to a couple of calls, and we have some emails as well, Nate. Okay. Main event, Johnny Gargano versus Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross, your NXT champion. The rare championship match on free TV. Is it rare? I don't even remember anymore. It seems like we get a lot of this, but I'm not sure we get a lot of this particular championship on TV. This went 12:46, which is shorter than the usual championship match, but longer than the usual Karrion Kross match, as he usually dominates pretty quick. Kross goes over in this one on Johnny Gargano in just under 13 minutes. No surprise here, I don't think. I don't think anyone thought that the championship would change hands in this heel-heel match. Seemed more like it was going to get us somewhere else. And somewhere else it did indeed get us. We got segments before this on the show with Samoa Joe, the special, not enforcer, the special referee for this match, laid down the law for both guys ahead of this match. He's been defined as a force in NXT, and I thought that this was fine because I thought it was leading somewhere, and tonight it did lead to that place. After Kross and Joe had a few moments in the match where they got in each other's faces. And if this had been a match with a babyface in it, it would have made the babyface look real bad that they had all these openings and did not win, because it was Teflon Johnny Gargano, who's essentially playing a heel anyway. Seems like it was the perfect choice to shove him in this match that nobody thought he was going to win anyway. Karrion Kross puts down Samoa Joe with the Kross jacket after the match, and he lays him out, knocks him out as the show goes to a close. Joe has no shortage of things out there. He's got a thing with Adam Cole. He's got a thing with Pete Dunne, where, you know, they look at each other and don't say anything. It's their thing, guys. And he's got this thing going on. Are there more? I don't even know. But Joe's got a lot going on. So if they're working him back into the main roster of NXT, they've given him lots of opportunities. Nate, on the main event, Karrion Kross defends successfully against Johnny Gargano.
So there was at least one person out there that was giving Gargano at least a small sliver of chance to maybe win, and that was me. And when I say small sliver of chance, I'm talking super small, and that's simply because we've been kind of rumors of a Karrion Kross call-up. So I was kind of thinking that might be the case tonight, but I couldn't really see where they'd necessarily go from there. So I think this certainly was the right choice and the right way to go, especially considering what happened after the match. I've been really chomping at the bit, it's not chomping at the bit, it's champing at the bit, isn't it?
Champing, yep.
Yeah, okay, see, I remembered that. You actually taught me something, Kelly. You taught me something.
That anyway, is literally why I'm here.
I know, you are.
Number one reason.
But no, I've been champing at the bit to see Samoa Joe get back in the ring for, God, forever. I think a lot of us have. Obviously it's been kind of tainted by injury and whatnot. I mean, as soon as he was healthy, he immediately got injured again. So it was only, I think, like maybe a month or two he was back after his last injury before this one. So I'm really hoping that this is actually going to lead into a Samoa Joe Karrion Kross feud. It seems like, probably, considering what we got tonight. And it's I thought it was interesting too that he got the, you know, he basically choked out Samoa Joe, considering that is what Samoa Joe is known for, is choking you out. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic once we actually get there. I have a feeling you're going to hear, you know, who's going to choke out who and whatnot. But really looking forward to that. As far as the match went, I thought the match was great. It's probably one of the better Karrion Kross matches, as far as I'm concerned. It's not necessarily, like you said, it was a little bit longer than your traditional Karrion Kross match where he gets, he's a little more dominant and whatnot, but I think I enjoyed this more. And it's interesting that I say that because I'm an advocate for Karrion Kross to be more dominant in the ring. But at the same time, I did enjoy this match a little bit more than his prior matches. It's hard to have a bad match when, you know, Johnny Gargano's involved as well. So I think overall it did a good job. Samoa Joe, I'm so glad to see back in the mix here, and I'm really hoping we get to see him versus Karrion Kross sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I liked the way that this was worked. Maybe that's because I just felt that this particular episode was very good in general, so I was full of good vibes already.
For sure.
But I thought that Kross dominated in a way and no-sold just enough. Johnny is somebody you need to stay strong enough. And this is, you know, you could use this as a match to completely eviscerate him like they did with Tommaso Ciampa before Ciampa took a little bit of time off TV to sell that. But I think it was, as just a regular TV match, it was just enough where we really didn't think Gargano had a chance. And that literally was the goal. We weren't supposed to think that he had a chance here. We're supposed to think that whenever somebody gets one over on Kross, it might be basically a fluke. That is what they're trying to do in creating a monster. So for all we've said about Kross that is tepid at best, it does seem like they've been very successful in building a monster, which is not always the easiest thing to do without defining down the rest of the division. So there you go. That cat who's making that noise is far away from me. I don't know how that carries so much. I'm so sorry, folks. If you are in the 615 area code, I'm sorry. I don't have my list of area codes and numbers near me, but I'm going to unmute you and you can go ahead and say, hey, and remind me for the 80th time who you are.
Kelly, again, I'll forgive you again. This is Sean, your amazing fiasco from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I knew you were gonna. I knew you were thinking that too, probably when I said it. So it's like,
yes. I was afraid of that. Okay, here we go.
It's okay. It's okay. I'm glad to talk to you, man. Nate, always good to talk to you, man. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Doing fantastic. How about yourself, Sean?
Oh, doing well. Going back to what you just said, what you guys said, I'm just excited to see Samoa Joe get back in the ring. I'm just super pumped. I pray he stays healthy and everything goes well, and I'm interested. But I thought the match tonight was very good. I think great gets not certain to you, Nate, but like I think great gets thrown around probably too much. Like I think it was a very good match. I wouldn't say it was a great match. I thought they did a good job telling the story, getting to where they went. I say great myself, and I'm like, man, was it really great? It's like, yeah, it was really good, but, you know, so I thought it was good. Gargano is fantastic. He's wonderful. I always love what he does, and the story is good. The two things I was going to bring up really fast, and I'll try to make them really quick, was do you think, and I will say, The Cameron Grimes, LA Knight stuff was I was cracking up the entire time. The skits were so good. I mean, they were so good.
Oh God, yeah.
I know you guys agree, but I just had to throw that out there. Cameron Grimes is doing fantastic stuff. I didn't know him on the indie scene. I never got a chance to see him until he came to NXT. But I just love. I see why Bruce Mitchell back in the day was so high on him, seeing him all the time. He's really good. So I want to know what you guys thought about those. And then one quick question about, I know it seems like forever ago, but the Saray-Gigi Dolan match. I'm kind of with Tom. I don't see necessarily a lot with Saray. Like, I think she's good in the ring. She's got some, you know, a couple cool moves. I didn't like when she was going for the submission and she placed the crowd way too long while in the submission and then goes to do the submission. And that's why. And then when she's in the Gigi's in the submission, she just, like, lets go of the submission. Like, Gigi didn't get out of it. She just let go of it. It was really, really weird to me. I was wondering what you guys thought about that. And in my way off base, did that totally look weird watching on TV?
That did really look weird. Let me go to Grimes and Knight first. Yeah, lots of fun. And, I mean, we're expecting lots of fun from these two guys when they take to the stage and when they do their thing. So we knew that that was going to be pretty good. We just didn't know how they were going to approach it. So I don't know why I didn't even think this, but I thought, okay, we got to get the thing where Knight is emasculating Grimes out of the way. And that's unfortunate because Grimes has such awesome forward momentum here that that it just seems like having him emasculated on TV is not the way to go. And it seems so obvious now, but you take Knight and you have him think that he's really got Grimes behind the eight ball. And of course Grimes is more than happy to do these things because he was not rich his whole life. And he's used to doing, like, these stupid menial jobs and being kind of whatever about it because that's life. But because he is a rich man, he does entrepreneurially hire this kid to do the lawn for him. And so we get what we want out of both these characters because Knight is doing everything he can to drag down a guy who he's beaten to force to be his butler. And Grimes just doesn't care. Because, like, this is not a new world to him. This is the one situation where a babyface can no-sell something and it really works. Because, of course, he would. This was his life. I loved this. And, like, this is so silly. But the two talents involved are making it so much better than it might look on the page, Nate.
I can't disagree with anything you've said. It's absolutely fantastic. So, like, I figured we were going to end up seeing, see the butler angle and basically just kind of see him beating down Cameron Grimes, and kind of Cameron Grimes not necessarily digging what he's doing because he wanted to win. He wanted to be the $1 million champion, not really liking what he's got. But you know what? I like this 1,000 times more. And like you said, I don't know why I didn't necessarily think about it or even see it coming. Cause it is, it's so obvious because like Cameron Grimes, he has not been, you know, like you say, hasn't been rich his whole life. He comes from those, comes from humble beginnings. So it's like, it's no big deal for him to do all of this stuff. And it's a lot of fun. They're going to have a lot of fun with this. Everything tonight was even like the flip in the pool, right? You know, it was cheesy. It looked cheesy. It looked like it was set up, right? But I didn't care. I didn't care because just the story they're telling me, the charisma of the talent involved, that's what's selling this whole thing. It's not necessarily, it's not necessarily every single minute little detail that's happening on the screen. But yeah, overall, I love that. I can get into the Saray Gigi Dolan match too, real quick. While I'm flapping my gums. As far as the match itself went, I think it was probably Saray's better match that she's had so far in NXT. I have really not gone out of my way to see much of her outside of WWE. In either her first couple matches, I wasn't. The first one I thought was okay. Second one I really wasn't impressed with, and this one I thought was better. My big thing is Gigi Dolan and this new gimmick that she debuted. I guess technically on WWE.com over this past week, where she challenged Saray for this match here tonight. But this new gimmick is certainly strange. In the hits and misses, I basically called it a cross between a Becky Lynch cosplayer and a dominatrix, because I could not think of what else to call it. And I'm not knocking it necessarily. I don't think it's a bad thing. I just didn't know how else to describe it. I'm going to give it some time before I say yay or nay, but I'm scratching my head as to what she's supposed to be, like bad cop or something. I don't know. It's weird. But I still think it was a decent match. The spot that you pointed out, Sean, certainly did look strange. I kind of wondered myself, why isn't she just trying to put her away? Why is she pandering to the crowd? But that's, I guess, wrestling in a way too. So whatever. It's something we could, I guess, gotta live with. But it does certainly 100% take you out of the moment, and you kind of make you feel like, hey, yeah, this wrestling stuff isn't really real. So yeah. But anyway, I'll let you talk about Gigi Nolan and Reyna.
So yeah, Gigi Nolan. If you're gonna fail, you gotta fail big, because you gotta fail in a memorable way. Because when you do something big,
Shockmaster failing,
even if it's bad, sure, even if it's bad, you've got to have some kind of foundation for the director to work with. And I'm using acting terms because that's where I come from. And I talk about this a lot on NXT 8 years back. Tom and I, both coming from an entertainment background, talk about those kind of terms and that side of the business, or, the business of acting. And what she's doing with her delivery is so bizarre. It was really bad. I'm watching that with my wife, and I turned to her after that, and I was like, well, I mean, it's something. She's trying. She tried a thing.
Yes, it is. It's something.
It sure is a thing that she did. And in the ring, I was just like, okay, so as long as it's good in the ring, as I've heard that Priscilla Kelly, formerly known as Priscilla Kelly, is, will be fine. I think the act is essentially an enchantress. But again, you got to build from there. She doesn't seem comfortable in the skin of the character yet, but at a time when we've had, they're telling everybody just be yourself, but turn the volume up. Like, that was the key to Steve Austin's success. And I get it, but if you have everybody just turn the volume up, then there's going to be a lot of sameness, because you don't get a lot of the larger than life characters like that, because there just aren't a whole lot of people that are out there that are that strange. We have our differences, but all the people who get into wrestling are of a few different types of people. And I just think that there has to be more than just turning the volume up. You got to try the crazy stuff like this. And some of it is Alexa Bliss and bleeding black, but sorry, I'm off the rails. Saray over Gigi Nolan, 325. I actually quite liked the match despite that weird moment. I thought that moment would have been absolutely fine. All Saray had to do was become frustrated with it, but then transition to another move from which then Gigi could break out of, instead of just saying, well, I tried. She didn't do anything, but got to do something else. It was just very weird for her to just stop. A transition into a front chancery it seems like it would have been so simple in that moment. Just float over and do that. But I guess what we got, we got what we got. And then Mandy Rose showed up.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I'm trying, but unfortunately I wrote it down, so I had to talk about it. Took a shot at her in my recap, because it seems like she had a reaction after the match that was supposed to tell a story, but she doesn't have the acting range to tell that story. And then she had one line later in the show, and it was not great, with Monet and friends, but we will get to Monet and friends later. I will say, I called this when she showed up after Saray and Gigi Nolan. I said, it seems like she would make sense in something to do with the new budding Frankie Monet faction that they're clearly teasing. But anything more on Mandy before I get back to the phone lines?
Not really. No, I'm kind of surprised. I was really surprised to see her. I didn't hear of anything or you know, anything like that. But her coming back, so usually I kind of hear at least something or read something that might even allude to a something. You know, so maybe there's something out there, but it just kind of slipped past me. But as far as I'm concerned, the best thing Mandy Rose did was all the stuff with Otis. And second best thing is stuff with Sonya Deville. So with that, none of that happening on the main roster right now, why not bring her back down NXT, let her work on her acting chops a little bit, let her work on her ring stuff, and let's see if they can build her up a little bit more. I personally like her. I think she's actually, you know, she's a good talent. She's not necessarily the best worker, but I think she's a good performer, and she's you're certainly got the look that the WWE is looking for. So why not try to work on her if you've got her?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so bullish, man. I'm not sure what's there at all.
I'm just trying to be optimistic. You know,
she's whatever. I don't see it, but if you want to kick the tires on her because you put the effort in, then let's do it.
Yeah, I'm not saying I necessarily see it either, but I think Vince and company see something else, and that's why they keep her around.
Nate, you're here because you temper the hatred that Tom and I sometimes have.
You know, somebody's got to be the cheery one.
Indeed. Sean, I'm going to put you back on because we've got many listeners, but just a couple that are looking to call into the show. Sean, do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, no, I love you guys' combo on that. That was great. No, I'm definitely with Kelly. I lean more toward you and Mandy, but Nate, I see your optimism, and I'm optimistic myself. So we'll see what they do with that. The one quick thing I was going to bring up, too, while I can, is that it was quick, but the Adam Cole promo, which was, you know, again, fine for what it was. Adam Cole, Adam's fantastic. Can't wait to see him on the main roster. At some point, if Vince does something with him, who knows. But when Bronson came out, I was kind of like, oh, man, I like Bronson, and he's done really well. But, man, Adam's going to get cheered more than you. I don't like where they're going with that, if that's where they go next. What do you guys think about that? And I appreciate you guys letting me get in another question. Thanks for all you do, man. Thank you guys for taking my call. Good to talk to y'all.
Always good to hear from you, Sean, as well. Yeah, when Bronson came out, you knew that was going to be perhaps the situation. But I thought he kind of held his own in crowd reaction in a way that most people don't against Adam Cole. I think that Reed has kind of got that blue collar cred that, that a lot of fans really do tend to like. It seems like they've bought into that, and they gave him a championship, and then they pulled the rug out from under him fairly quickly. And that is sometimes something that can endear fans to a certain wrestler. And, I don't think that's a small part of what happened here. I do think absolutely that he'll eat this pin unless Cole is actually going to the main roster. This seems like a weird position to put him in, but you take Reed, who's very popular, and then you also take Samoa Joe, who's extremely popular, and you put him in this situation. I guess if you're trying to get a boo reaction from Adam Cole, you're giving yourself the best chance you can by putting him in this segment with these talents. And then maybe when they go to Cole O'Reilly 3, which we all know is happening before long, maybe there's a chance that he'll be booed. I've been against them going against the grain with Adam Cole, but on the other hand, I am starting to see that maybe it just makes sense that if Cole's going to be brought up to the main roster as a heel, which I absolutely think he should be, then you might as well have him work his chops as a heel in Florida and just work heel there and perfect his craft there, because then he's already like he's got the reps in before he goes to the main roster. So if that's what he's going to do, and he should, because he's wasted on a national level as a babyface. Like, let it happen organically, but not right away. So I'm in favor of this weird seeming booking as long as he's going to the main roster soon. If he isn't, then this is stupid and you should just make him a face, Nate.
I couldn't say it better myself. I'm obviously digging what Adam Cole's doing right now, but yeah, I mean, he's coming across as a face. Well, mostly because of the crowd reaction, people's reactions to him, not necessarily what he's doing, but people just want to love Adam Cole. So I think, you know, if they are going to be moving up the main roster, then yeah, fine, you know, work with this for now. And Bronson Reed, you know, I pointed out on the hits and misses. I was actually surprised that the crowd reaction for, I was going to say Karrion Kross, the crowd reaction for Bronson Reed opposite opposite Adam Cole. I was kind of really more expecting more to see to hear a more of a negative reaction for Bronson Reed against or really anybody against Adam Cole. But no, you're right. I mean, Bronson Reed certainly held his own with the reaction. And, you know, I think people have started to grow to like Bronson Reed. I wouldn't say he's my favorite person on the roster by any stretch, but I'm not necessarily like, but yeah, before we'd see Bronson Reed come on, I was like, oh, all right, cool. Like, you know, here we go. Another squash type match. And I'm kind of enjoying him more and more. You know, I did enjoy his short North American title run. Yeah. It wasn't really anything to, you know, write home about, but I like the fact that they did actually, you know, give him the belt and put that on him, gave him that, you know, that little credibility there. But yeah, you know, like I don't really think I have a whole heck of a lot to add you know, from what you already said. So rather than just flap my gums, we'll move on.
There you go. I think part of the dichotomy in responses to Adam Cole has to do with his opposition. You got Kyle O'Reilly, and it seems like Kyle O'Reilly's trying really hard to be cool. And you got Bronson Reed, and it seems like he's trying really hard to be Bronson Reed. So I think that's what people are responding to. I feel like I'm high in a college dorm room, and that's where I came up with that statement. But I don't know why it made me think that, because neither of those things are true. But there you go. Let us go to another call. This is our very good friend Darrell. The one phone number I have memorized, because at my age, I have a maximum of one number that I can memorize. That belongs to our friend, Darrell, from Georgia. Darrell, say hey.
How y'all doing today?
I'm doing great, Darrell. Glad to be back on the show. Glad to be talking to you.
Yes, sir. Good to be talking to you gentlemen tonight. Pretty good show. My first question, just discussion for the day, would be that Dakota Kai match and Ember Moon match. I kind of that match swung me a little because I, for a while, especially when Dakota at that end, close to the end, they had me thinking that Dakota Kai was gonna win. Then they swung me to Ember Moon, and I was like, well, this must be a way that they're gonna build up her back up for another challenge or something, or a start something. But then they let Dakota Kai go ahead and pull it out. And then having Xia Li come in and make a challenge, which is, I guess, that's going to be unique and see how they play this out. And that look that Dakota Kai gave when Xia Li came and just walked past her and went straight after the champ. So, and I think that's going to play a longer picture down, hopefully, in the whole grand scheme of everything as well. But it's good to see Dakota Kai have such an awesome and amazing match. Not amazing, but good match. And, you know, so what do you guys think about that? Do you think they're sprinkling in something that Dakota Kai going to eventually, you know, flip on Raquel so they can get that babyface Raquel, I guess, that they beat teasing sometimes? And how do you like the challenge of Xia Li, and where you think that would go?
Okay, this was a busy show tonight. Lots of things going on, lots of moving parts, lots of opportunities for direction, and I love that. Never more evident than in the main event, Ember Moon, or opener, rather, Ember Moon versus Dakota Kai. I've got this timed at 13 minutes flat. That sounds like I faked the time, but that's what I clocked it at. Dakota Kai goes over Ember Moon clean. We got a lot of shots of Raquel Gonzalez that kind of made it a red herring that this was going to be about Ember and Raquel, but that's not what happened. Dakota Kai goes over clean. Zaya comes out, makes the challenge, and she walks past Dakota Kai, which has been happening a lot, and she makes the direct challenge to Raquel. I love the subtleties of this story. I love what they've done with Raquel and Kai in a very subtle way, and I'm so impressed and so thrilled and so proud to be a Dakota Kai fan because of how well she is doing the subtleties in this performance. I just love it so much. So sorry I'm gushing, but this was a really good segment. Dakota goes over, and if anybody's got a claim to really being right there to challenge for this championship, maybe it's starting to be her. She knows it. But Raquel's not even thinking about that. So when Zaya comes in and walks past the person who just won a hard-fought match with one of the other best women on the roster, obviously Dakota should be annoyed. And she didn't overplay it like a lot of wrestlers would, because that's what they know how to do. She was very, very good at conveying growing annoyance that she is being overlooked when she's as good as she is. Ember also was very good here. I didn't know how they were going to handle Tegan Knox stealing her partner going up to the main roster, but they framed it as Ember Moon being very happy for Shotzi getting the call up. But yes, you've got Zaya here. That's going to be the real weird part of this, is they needed somebody to do this moment in front of Dakota Kai, but this segment literally made me think Dakota Kai might be the next champion. And if not, she's at least going to have an extended feud with Raquel at some point. And I don't know how it'll start, but yes, I do believe she will turn Raquel babyface. So Zaya versus Raquel could be awkward from a face heel standpoint, but if Raquel's already going face, then I understand it. So lots to love here for me, Nate, in exactly 13 minutes, Dakota Kai over Ember Moon in your opener.
All right. So I liked the match, but what I didn't really necessarily like about the segment, and it's, I guess, more of a nitpick than anything, is the fact that Ember just kind of got almost tossed to the side here. Because I thought that, you know, Ember was probably going to try and challenge for the title or get a win over Dakota Kai or something like that. And then when it was all said and done, she was just kind of out of the scene and out of the picture. And it just seemed weird. I'm hoping that builds into something for Ember. And, you know, because I don't want to see her just toil around now in the NXT women's division. Yeah, I don't want to see what happened to her on the main roster happen to her now back in NXT. I think she's too talented for that. That said, I definitely, all of the nuances that you were talking about with Dakota Kai and all of that, absolutely loved it. It was fantastic. She's doing an amazing, amazing job, you know, conveying exactly those emotions and doing it very subtly. If you weren't paying attention, you may not notice it. And that's probably a good thing, because it's going to, for those people that don't notice it and don't see it, it's going to be a shock once the two finally do start, you know, butting heads and Dakota finally does turn on Raquel, assuming that's the way it goes. It's got to be the way it goes. But yeah, I certainly get down on that. With Xia Li, I love Xia Li. Don't get me wrong. It was a little bit, the first thing that went through my mind when she came out was, wow, they're putting her in the spot after she knocked out Mercedes. And I know things happen. It's a fluke. But Xia, as much as I like Xia, she's had a couple of those moments in the past handful of months where she's either hurt somebody or there's been you know, a couple botches or things like that. Like, I just don't necessarily know, and I think we even have an email about this later on, I don't necessarily know that she's ready for the spot. So I'm not sure what we're going to see once we actually get the match, because, again, it's still like, I like Raquel Gonzalez, and I think she's come along really, really, really well. But I feel like she's still somebody that needs more of a veteran in the ring to have a really fantastic match. So with Zaya and Raquel in the ring, I don't know. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm feeling good tonight. I'm hoping it's going to be a good match. But there's something back in my head that's saying that it might not be quite as good as I would expect your traditional NXT women's championship match to be. So we'll see. We'll see. As I always tend to say, we'll see where that goes. What was I going to, there was something else I was going to say, and I screwed myself up with saying, we'll see where it goes. I don't remember. So I'll just end it there.
Indeed. So Zaya, yeah, she's the big question mark here. I don't know where she's headed. Corporal Fuzzington is freaking out about it right now. She doesn't know where this is headed. Zaya, I felt like having somebody do this was more about the moment happening to Dakota Kai than anything, but it will be interesting to see what Zaya and Raquel do, because they're both at a point where the other person is probably mostly calling the match when they're having a match. So it'll be interesting, but I think there's a good chance that Zaya versus Raquel will be more of an angle than a match. And I certainly don't think it will eclipse like 8 minutes. I would be very surprised.
Oh, yeah, me too.
If that's what this does. So, yep, that is your big question mark from the opening segment. But gotta love the work that was done. Otherwise, Darrell, if you're there, go ahead and hit me with another one.
Okay. Now, I love that they gave the little spotlight to the two guys in the breakout tournament match. And I like the match itself. I'm intrigued by Duke Hudson. He surprised him when they gave him his little segment with his talking segment. And I think Jiro, I don't know if I'm saying his name right. So, but I'm interested to see how they play around with him as well, because I think he's the guy that'll fall and could fall into place behind the Cameron Grimes, because I'm potentially thinking Cameron Grimes going to be the number one babyface on the show, especially if they can ever go out and go on tours or go back to big arenas for takeovers. But but that match was it was a good match. I liked it. It wasn't too much. Wasn't a lot. Hopefully, all these first round matches, these first few round matches, be this type of match until you can build up until when you get to those two semifinal matches and then final matches. But how did you guys enjoy the match? How did you like the personality of the guys? And what are your upside for those two?
In 4 minutes and 49 seconds, Duke Hudson, formerly known as Brendan Vink, I believe that's his real name, but I'd have to look that up, goes over Ikem and Jiro, who is a 205 Live standout. Loved it. I love how silly Jiro is. I love that he wrestles with the jacket on and works the jacket into some spots. And Duke Hudson, oh boy, what a revelation this guy. If there's anything to be said for keeping a guy off TV way too long to just make sure you got the right thing, it feels like Hudson is the one, because man, oh man, was he really – really confident in his heel act and delivery. He has got an arrogance that would make Rick Martel blush. He's so, so good at this. Arrogance is an easy thing for a wrestler to do. A lot of heel wrestlers are asked to be arrogant, but so few can pull it off in such a beautifully smarmy way as Duke Hudson. And then on top of it, in the ring, he's imposing. He's got a lot of power, and they did a good a good big versus small match here, and both of them brought a lot of character into this match. I think this match was a win all around. I think it did good for both of them. Duke is the right guy to move on, I would say. I don't know this bracket at all yet. I've seen it, but that kind of thing doesn't stick in my mind anymore, so I'll just wait for next week and enjoy it. I really like that they're only doing one match a week, because that it's hard enough to get one guy over at a time. Getting eight over at a time doesn't make sense at all. So, yes, take your time with this. Give them their moments. Jiro had a fun segment, kind of giving his mission statement, and Duke, I thought, had a great one. And then just really strong stuff in the match from him. Boss Man Slam to finish. Wade Barrett used to call that the Winds of Change, and he brought that up. So whatever you want to call that move, he did it. And I would say Boss Man Slam because I am old, but it's all the same to me. But I think a really good start, and without reminding myself who's in this thing, it's hard to imagine them not going with Duke after this one single match. But I'd love to be proven wrong, because I said that Grimes, without a doubt, was going to the finals and probably winning the first breakout tournament. He didn't win, but doesn't seem to have slowed his momentum. Nate.
So as much as I did like Duke Hudson here tonight, I'm really curious to see Josh Briggs once his match comes around. Former Evolve champion, and they made a little bit of a big deal about him last week when they're panning around everybody. They kind of stuck on him a little bit longer than everybody else. So I'm thinking it might be him. I'm also a personal favorite is Carmelo Hayes. I really liked what he brought out a couple weeks ago. I think a little bit more so than you and Tom, but or at least I don't think you were on the show actually that week.
I think it was Tom. I think Carmelo is relatively brutal on the mic, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, no, I'm not necessarily digging his mic work, but I certainly liked what he had in the ring. So, mic work, they can work on. I mean, I guess Ricochet is an example of somebody that maybe can't work on their mic skills, but we'll see. But in terms of this match, Eichmann Hero, wow. I think I might have found my new favorite weird, wacky undercard guy. And before that was Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes moving up the card a little bit, so I'm not saying he's getting replaced, but my favorite wacky, more undercard guy here. I feel like Eichmann Hero is a character that if my buddy Conrad was Japanese, he would immediately make and come up with. It was the over-the-top gimmick. Really resonated with me. I loved it. It's certainly not a gimmick that's going to go anywhere or move up the card super high, but for what it is, I like it. It's fun, it's entertaining, and I think he does a really great job at portraying it. It's fantastic. As far as Duke Hudson goes, I cannot disagree with a thing that you just said, maybe outside of him potentially being the winner of the tournament, because maybe he will be, but I'm thinking it might be Josh Briggs. Other than that, though, I loved what he had out there tonight. Very brutal. The Boss Man Slam, that's a move I personally, it's just a simple move, but I love it. It's very effective. It looks powerful. Always liked it when Bossman brought it out. I like how Wade Barrett used it. And there's other people that have used it over the years as well. But I think he certainly pulled it off very well, very effective. He's very crisp, and a lot of his moves just like there was snap to them. If that makes sense, they looked like they would probably hurt, even though they probably don't. They looked a little bit more vicious than. A lot of the other people that you see in the ring. So overall, I think this is, like you said, I think it's a big win for both guys. And it really has me pumped for the breakout tournament, coming up. This was actually my most anticipated match of the night. This was, I think, the one match I actually remembered that they booked last week that I knew was coming tonight, even though that they had mentioned, Gargano and Cross was here for tonight. I wasn't thinking about that. I was actually more focused on the breakout tournament this week than the NXT Championship, simply because I feel like NXT and WWE in general has just been spinning their wheels for so long right now. An injection of new talent is certainly welcome. And if what we, I mean, granted, Brandon Vink, which by the way, that is his real name. He's been around for a while. It was almost a year ago that they brought him up as, I think it was like Tony Kidora or Tony Medora or something like that, with Shane Thorne up on the main roster. And then they brought him back down. So he's been around for a while. You know, Tom brings him up all the time and, you know, really, really, really liked what he brought tonight in particular. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing this breakout tournament progress.
Yes, indeed. Tournaments, love them. And yes, indeed, I picked him as the winner of the tournament based on not remembering who else is in the tournament. So there you go. Durell, if you got one more, go ahead. Otherwise, we'll start on this other stuff.
Okay. My last thing would be, okay, we got a couple of teasers of a couple of different matchups we have. The Gang Wars that's going to start with Escobar Dem and Hit Row. I'm interested in seeing how that go, because right now, in most people's eyes, that would be two heel factions, but one crew in my eyes is not heel, so at best, I'll pass that on to you guys and let you guys debate. And we had Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher versus Pete Dunne and Oney Larkin. So I want to see how these go, and I see that they're keeping Pete Dunne strong in the end, so I'm wondering if he'll be either interview between him and Adam Cole, who will be a potential shot for Karrion Kross. So what do you guys think about the two things that they tease tonight?
Okay. We thank you, Darrell, as always. Hit Row and Legado del Fantasma. We got a tease here. Let's just do this by talking about Loomis versus Escobar tonight. This went 9-17. Escobar goes over Loomis with some help from his friends, Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza. This was, for me, Loomis's best match on NXT TV. Had a fairly decent-ish one with Johnny Gargano in the past, and he did some fun stuff with Cameron Grimes, though I wouldn't say it was like about match quality, more about quality of character. Loomis is getting to a point after kind of a while in the company where he's finally bringing enough of his character into the match and trying to figure out how to use his character to enhance the match rather than how to just build to a match with the character and then just to have a straightforward match. I really, really like his improvement. It's so weird for a guy who said nothing on TV to have this kind of an arc, but he's improved just leaps and bounds in terms of getting his character into the ring, which has just enhanced the quality of his matches so much. Escobar, we knew, was already good at that and just great in the ring. So another very good match for Escobar, but a very, very good match for Loomis and just a great match all around. Again, maybe great is a strong word, Sean, I'm sorry. But Escobar over Loomis in 9-17 in the crossover match. And we're talking about Escobar and Legado now feuding with Hit Row. This is kind of like having two kids, as I do, and having them fight because you love them both. So you know, it's exciting, but you don't want to see either one get beat up. Man, oh man, these are two awesome, awesome factions. They're both so cool. For me, it's Hit Row all day, every day. Hit Row, my favorite act in the company right now. And I mean the company. They're my favorite act. I just love what they're doing. I get more excited for them and mark for them than anybody. Super psyched about Hit Row. But it'll be very interesting to see who they promote as de facto faces, if they bother to do that at all, or if they And if they decide that one side should be the faces, it'll be interesting to see if they guess right, if they guess right who the fans will respond to. So Escobar over Loomis, 9-17 in the crossover match, and Legato's budding feud with Hit Rodney.
So I agree. I think this is probably one of my favorite Dexter Loomis matches going so far. You know, like you said, he did have a good one with Gargano, and there's been a couple others that I know I remember halfway liking, but this one tonight actually got me. For example, you know, he snuck under the ring and started tripping people. I thought that was funny. I thought that was great. He's certainly started to make some character improvements, and even the stuff with Indy Hartwell and the whole index thing. You know, at first I was rolling my eyes at it, and now I'm kind of going, aw, you know, and I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm divorced and lonely and I like a good storyline like that. But hey, you know, it's cool. I'm liking this. When Dexter Loomis first kind of debuted here, shortly after the last breakout tournament, was just about when I started doing the podcast. And I, at first, really liked Dexter Loomis. I liked the stoic character and all of that stuff. But then it was like, okay, what do you do with that? You can't – he wasn't doing anything with it that was really intriguing or that hasn't been done before, anything that really got him to stand out. And then Ridge Holland debuted. And I felt like Ridge Holland was Dexter Loomis taking to the next level. It was everything that I liked about Ridge about Dexter Loomis. But then he spoke, and he had a little bit more of an edge to him, and things like that. Ridge Holland then went away with injury, and Dexter Loomis just kind of, at least to me, felt like a light version of Ridge Holland for a while, until Ridge Holland kind of escaped my brain. But it just wasn't really anything that I was getting really drawn to. And it was really one of those all right, if I got to go to the bathroom or something, I'll wait till Dexter Loomis comes up. Tonight and even the past few weeks, I've really started to enjoy what he's been doing a little bit more. And the stuff, like I said, with Indy Hartwell, it's interesting, and I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. In a way, I'm kind of thinking, in the back of my head, it reminds me of almost the whole Kane and Tori storyline when Kane got his first girlfriend. And I'm hoping it's not as stupid as that. We'll obviously see what happens. But that was one of the first things that came to mind when the whole index thing started. Then in terms of Hit Row and Legado del Fantasma, this is certainly something I am looking forward to, and I am really hoping that they frame Hit Row, and I'm going to say as a face, but I don't necessarily want them to turn face. I want them to lean face. If they're going to do that, I want to have them lean face and have Legado lean heel. I feel like Legado, I feel like Legato would be more of the natural fit for that because of the charisma level of Hit Row. I think they're going to be able to get the fans behind them. I mean, last week they went out there and they performed a 5-minute show for everybody. It wasn't even wrestling. It was a rap show, but it was good and it was entertaining. I don't remember, I don't necessarily think that the live crowd was super, super into it, but I enjoyed it. I know Darrell enjoyed it. I know Tom enjoyed it. I think they've got something there with Hit Row. And that seems even more like a main roster act, and I do not want to see them go to main roster. But I feel like that level of an act is more of a main roster act than an NXT act, and I think that's going to bring them some major success here in NXT as well as the main roster if and when they get up there. I just don't want to see that happen because they ruin everything I love. There was something else I wanted to say too. I think it had something to do with Hit Row, but I don't remember. It's again second time it happened to me tonight. Kids, get your sleep. That's all I can say. Get your sleep.
Yes, indeed. Hit Row Cipher, my favorite part of last week. I wasn't here, but I did. I probably typed it at you guys. I definitely tweeted. It was my favorite part of the show, on a show that I thought was just fine. So yes, I loved it. So there we go. Let's do an email from Jason Nelson, our friend Jason Nelson, our new friend Jason Nelson. Hey, guys, first-time emailer, but a long-time listener to your show and to NXT 8 years back as well. As a side note, anyone who isn't listening to NXT 8YB, you should really check it out. Come to find out who Oliver Gray and Chris Christopherson's sons are. Stay for the in-depth discussion of movies. Jason, thank you. Yeah, Tom and I love doing that show. Go VIP, listen to the show. It's a great time.
I think Kelly just likes doing it because he doesn't have to deal with me.
I mean, it's a hidden benefit. So, oddly enough, I was actually compelled to email the show by the showing tonight of Duke Hudson. I thought his natural charisma and projection of confidence really stood out during his promo, and that promo just felt so natural. It didn't feel like he was reading someone else's lines, and he came across as completely at ease in front of the camera. Once the bell rang, I thought he looked more than competent, and if anything, gave Jiro too much offense. So, all that being said, considering how poor the company has been at creating stars, what would you all think about, one, having him win the breakout tournament, and two, winning the NXT title in his first shot? What does the company have to lose by strapping a rocket to a tall, good-looking kid who has some pieces to work with and seeing what happens? Or is this tournament just an inevitable showcase for Odyssey Jones and I should just forget this idea? Also, it seems like we're headed for a match between Samoa Joe and Karrion Kross, but watching tonight, Joe seemed winded just from refereeing. If they're gearing up for a big match for SummerSlam weekend, I hope he starts hitting the treadmill. Thanks for checking out my email and keeping up the great work, guys. Jason from Long Island, 15-plus year VIP member, I think. I was told there would be no math. I like this guy already. Okay.
No math.
So,
no math.
As far as – I'm quite good at math, but always love a good anti-math joke. So as far as the hitting the treadmill thing, I think that Joe seeming winded – could easily be part of him promoting himself as being beyond his prime. It could be that. I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt. But certainly, when guys aren't in there getting reps, that does happen. Sometimes worse than others. When Batista was the extremely ill-advised winner of the 2014 Royal Rumble, he was extremely gassed, only worked like 7 minutes to his win and could not even stand up straight to have his hand raised. It was pretty rough. A little bit of time outside the ring does get you out of shape. So that is tough, but if they're working towards something like that, I would think that Joe has the drive. I believe implicitly in Samoa Joe. Let's just put it that way. As far as Duke winning the, I'm all in, but again, need to be reminded what else we're going to see. Jiro getting some offense is fine with me because it was still sub 5 minutes and Jiro's offense was short-lived. It was a very good big versus small, where the small did everything he could to strike early and often, but Duke was never in that much jeopardy. And when he put him away, it was definitive. So it doesn't bother me at all. And I don't think it bothered you that much, Jason, either. But I would just say that as far as him winning the championship in his first shot, that is a while away. I wouldn't want it to be against another heel like Kross, because that doesn't do either of them any favors. But if somebody finally overcomes Kross and then immediately this jerk comes in and undoes those good vibes, that could be extremely powerful, very much in the Sami Zayn vein, almost 8 years back, you know, 6-7 years back in NXT, where he worked his ass off to get a championship match, won the championship match, and then his best friend turned on him and Kevin Owens took that championship. So, yeah, it's there you go. There's Jason Nelson's email. So, Nate, anything on that?
All right. Well, Jason, thanks for the email. Appreciate the first time. I hope to hear from you again. So with I'll start with the Samoa Joe thing, because that was something that stood out to me big time tonight. Was he not only looked gassed, but I mean he was drenched, soaking wet. I mean, and it he was just reffing. Now Samoa Joe in the ring has certainly been known to sweat. So you know, but yeah, he wasn't performing tonight. He was a ref. That was something that stood out to me too. However, I will basically parrot what Kelly just said. Is I have faith in Samoa Joe. I think even if he does go out there and he's gassed, he's still going to push through it, you know, at least as best he can. I mean, I've watched him do it before. He hasn't been in the greatest of shape since being in the WWE compared to, you know, his time on the indies period. And, you know, he's certainly started to slow down, you know, as he's gotten older. But I still think he's going to be able to go out there and give a damn good match. It may not be a super, super long match, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be either. But I think he's certainly going to go out there and perform. I don't think it's going to be a hindrance. But obviously, you know, I think if he wasn't going out there and was as gassed as he was, it would certainly be better for himself and for the match in general. But fingers crossed, it's not going to be a problem and everything will be fine once the match actually does come into place. And as far as the stuff for Duke Hudson, so I wouldn't be like down on this idea either personally. You know, just kind of having, and maybe not necessarily Duke Hudson, right? But having just somebody, you know, all of a sudden come into the company, win a breakout tournament, challenge for the NXT title, win the NXT title, all in like a series of like 3 or 4 months, right? Why not? Like, it's going to build, I mean, it could completely backfire, but it could also push somebody to the moon, depending on who it is. You know, Kevin Owens is a perfect example of that. Granted, Kevin Owens had a lot of star power already coming in, you know, Kevin Steen, you know, he on the indies, everybody knew who he was. I mean, I knew who he was. He was a big, 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 big name, big get for the WWE. So for him to come in and then kind of have that, you know, that run that he had in NXT, super dominant run, bring the NXT championship to the US title open challenge and all that stuff. That, why not? Why not try something like that again? It's been, I mean, what'd you say? It was 2014, 2015, however long that was. I mean, it seems like it was just yesterday, but which is completely insane to me. It was that long ago, but why not? It's been a while now. So, you know, it depends. You do it right with the right person, I think it could certainly work. I don't necessarily know if this is going to be a showcase for Odyssey Jones or not. He's actually one that I forgot about myself when we were talking about this earlier in the night. But I still kind of have a feeling, and again, we're only one match in here, but I'm kind of, I got my money on Josh Briggs, at least as of right now. You know, obviously I think in the next couple of weeks, you might start to have a couple other ideas and a little bit better idea where the breakout tournament may go. But, you know, I don't necessarily know if Duke Hudson's going to win. He probably maybe make it a little far considering what we see here tonight. But, my money's still on Biggs or Briggs.
I have been on the media calls with Triple H, most of the takeovers, pre-takeover and post-takeover calls for the last few years. And in talking about tournaments, there have been times where he has intimated that these things are fluid. They have a winner in mind, but it can happen that someone steps forward and you've got to change something. And that can happen for a myriad of reasons. Like the Cruiserweight Classic was built to be Kota Ibushi versus Zack Sabre Jr., which would have been the better final match than TJ Perkins versus Graham Metalik. But they were able to sign those two guys. So they made that the finish instead. But sometimes with these tournaments that where you've got everybody, it could be that you have a plan in mind, but somebody else steps forward. He insinuated that MSK, while they were the choices to win that tournament, they had a plan in place in case the work wasn't there and MSK shouldn't be the winners of that tournament. So very interested to see this tournament. And And I will probably ask him on one of these calls afterwards if this tournament went as planned. And he will say yes, no matter what the truth is, because he's very good at this. Anyway, let's go to Casey and Caden. Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter versus Aaliyah and Jesse Kamea. In 327, Casey and Caden go over. They are one of the only regular teams in NXT, and yet we've got 4 months of a championship that has existed. Four different teams, eight different women who have held it, and these are not among them. I thought at first this may have been created for them to be the conquerors against, like, Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. How long ago that seems. But anyway, they go over Aaliyah and Jesse Kamea, the Robert Stone brand. Lots going on here. Afterwards, Aaliyah kicks the crap out of Robert Stone to leave the group. And then Frankie Monet shows up. And a few segments later, Frankie Monet is framed by a just wooden acting Mandy Rose and others as the new leader of this brand. They just said the brand this time, made sure just to say the brand. And they said that Monet might be in control here. This seems like if you really want Monet high up, it's a weird way, weird place to put her. But since the whole cause that you're trying to get across is factions, I guess you might as well do a faction. So it's going to be her, Kamea, and I think Robert Stone, if he's not leaving. This was Aaliyah's biggest moment in NXT to date. She beat the hell out of Robert Stone, and she got the big "you deserve it" chant as she's going up the ramp. And I'm just thinking, Aaliyah's gotten a little better over the years, but never to where I would say she should be put in a really high-end storyline. And Aaliyah beating her way out of this, like, it could be the end of her. It seems like all the important stuff is happening away from her. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe they'll do something really crazy with Aaliyah. But it seems like this is just a way to get to Frankie and Jesse Kamea as a dominating heel tag team that is probably the next tag team champions. Nate?
Yeah, probably. It certainly is kind of what I was thinking as well. As far as the match itself went, Casey and Caden, anytime they get in the ring, I'm glued to the screen. Between just the aerobatics of Casey Catanzaro and everything that she can bring to the table with just the crazy, crazy, like, American Ninja Warrior stuff that she does, as well as the athleticism of Caden Carter and just their charisma together. I love it. They're such a great unit together. And I think that, they certainly are more than deserving of at least the title shot, man. Like, I can't believe they haven't even, gotten that close at this point. I got to give big props to Aaliyah tonight. This was fantastic. Corbin is also starting to come alive now too, so you're probably going to hear his squeaky toys and some noise out of him for the rest of the night. But this was an amazing night for Aaliyah. I thought that the crowd reaction for her was fantastic, and she even, Tom actually brought this up in our Skype chat, but I mean, she even just kind of looked like, wow, you guys actually like me. Like, she'd never had a reaction like that before. And that was really cool to see. She's somebody that I never really latched onto. However, I think it was a show called Breaking Ground,
I was just going to say a lot of people latched onto her, and I watched that. And as a result, almost every time I mention her, even though I've been talking about Aaliyah for like 5 years, I want to call her Noof because that's her name, and that's what they called her on the show.
No, exactly, exactly. And actually, I kind of forgot about Noof at this point, but I did latch on to her because of the of that particular show. I really liked her story, and I thought that what they told about her in particular, and her drive and motivation and stuff was cool. And I wanted to see her succeed. And then just over the past few years, she hasn't really gotten there. And tonight it was a cool moment to finally see somebody that I've wanted to I've been rooting for. I've been wanting to see her break out. And, it's cool to finally see that and see the crowd get behind her as much as they did. Was really refreshing and rewarding for somebody like that. However, you're right. It does seem like everything is kind of now moving away from her. Does this mean she's going to all of a sudden start challenging for the women's title? I don't know. But in a way I hope not, because I don't feel like she's necessarily there yet, and I don't think people are going to necessarily buy her as a credible threat, within the next few months anyway, if they were to do something like that. But I think, at least for the next, maybe 6 or so months, start building her up and make her a bit of a bigger name on your roster, and finally do something with her and things. I think not only would she flourish at it, but the crowd reaction tonight I think shows that there is a craving for it. So I'm curious to see how this develops, but overall I really liked what she did here tonight.
Yeah, I think she'll get an iffy win over Jessica Maia and then a loss to
Monet or
Frankie.
Something.
Yeah, that's what I see. And then it's going to be few and far between the TV. I'd love to be wrong.
Me too.
I've always wanted to cheer for Aaliyah. I just wish that it had come along faster, because
yep.
When she's in the ring, I'm just like, yeah. I wanted to be there. Okay, so Bobby Fish versus Tyler Rust. Earlier in the week, whatever, in one of these YouTube videos, Malcolm Bivens and the Diamond Mine were talking. Bobby Fish makes a vague-ish challenge. He wants to fight Roderick Strong in the other Undisputed Era feud. So might as well have two of them going on since there are four guys. So, yes, he wants to fight him in the other feud. But honestly, I'm more interested in this feud than Kyle and Adam. They just don't have me with that one. I wish they did. But Bobby Fish, I think, has been kind of surprisingly competent in his role as a singles babyface. Like nothing great, like nothing super high card, but I think he's been pretty good in holding his own as a single, doing some mic work. But he makes a challenge, and Roddy says, "I'll deal with you down the road. Tonight, Tyler Rust will take care of you." Tyler Rust did take care of him on this night, 2 minutes and 37 seconds. Tyler Rust over Bobby Fish. Tyler Rust is going to sound ridiculous, but he's like a top 5 or 10 wrestler for me right now. I love how aggressive he is. He's relentless. He wrestles every match as if it's important, and he goes hard at his opponent. He's not a young guy, just like all the guys in Diamond Mine. None of them are young, and but he's legit, and he looks like he could just destroy you. If it feels like it. I don't know if he's not talking because he can't, because he's not good at it or what, but I feel like keeping him quiet for now is the way to go. I really think that Rust is the future of this particular faction. I don't know if that's where he's going to be pushed, But I'm sure I'd push him that way. Anyway, Rust goes over Fish, but it's a big distraction. And all of Diamond Mind is closing in on Bobby Fish. And Kushida makes the save to great reaction. Kushida and Tyler Rust on opposite sides. Again, it's like me choosing children. Because this is going to be good stuff. It's going to be fun. Lots and lots of talent in this feud. And I'm very interested just to see what matches we get. We don't even know which match is the end game for this yet. But we're going to get a lot of good out of this, Nate.
I can't disagree. I think this is going to be fantastic one way or another. I'm really digging Diamond Mine. Obviously we weren't sure what this was going to be, if this was going to be a faction or a thing or whatever. And I'm not sure I necessarily like the name. It doesn't necessarily roll off the tongue for a faction, but I can deal with it. But the faction itself, I'm super digging. Malcolm Bivens as the mouthpiece is amazing. I'm so glad they're finally doing something with him rather than just kind of having him toil around or whatever. After he was working with Authors of Pain. Indushare, thank you. I was like, it's not the Authors of Pain, it's the other ones, Indushare. After that, we kind of just really hadn't seen him, and he is far too talented to keep off TV, especially if you're going to keep Robert Stone on TV, as a manager. So, Malcolm Bivens all the way. And I like Robert Stone, but Malcolm Bivens, man. With Tyler Rust, I can't disagree with you. He is fantastic as well. Brutal in the ring. He's got a presence about him. He's got a look about him. I think he could certainly be a star. As far as his mic ability, that I do want to see, kind of make a bit of a more of a determination on, because I don't know if, he's just not talking because he can't or what. And that kind of almost leads me, because Malcolm Bivens is so good, it kind of leads me to think that maybe these three guys aren't. And we know Roddy's not the greatest on the mic, and we haven't really heard much out of Rust, and I'm sure, and I can't think of the other guy's name right now, but I'm sure English isn't his first language. So
his name is Hideki Suzuki. I can't remember if they've named him
him on screen yet.
He goes he's gone by Hideki Suzuki, but I don't know if he's going to go by that on this show.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, they haven't brought him up. They haven't actually named him yet. They called him the coach tonight, which I thought was interesting. They said, they get the future, the talent, and the coach. I forget exactly what they said about Rust and Strong, but they pointed him and said they have a great coach. And I thought that was interesting. Is he there specifically to coach, or is he there as a wrestler? We're probably obviously going to see him get in the ring, but is that his, quote, role right now? Which
it's a good question. He's older than you think. He's like 38 years old.
Yeah, because when you were saying, I think it was a few weeks ago, you were saying that everybody in here is like, over 35. I was like, wow, really? I knew Roddy was, but and Suzuki looked like he probably was. I did not think Rust is as old as he was, old as he is. But yeah, so I thought that was interesting. They pointed to him, said the coach. I'm really, really curious to see how this pans out. From what I've been reading, Diamond Mind is really something to elevate the cruiserweight division, which was clear tonight with the addition of Kushida. Which I know that there was an interaction between Kushida and Strong. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I know that there was something there. And that's why he came out tonight, to help out Bobby Fish. But from what I've been hearing, that this is something to elevate the cruiserweight division. So we're probably going to wind up seeing the cruiserweight belt on Robert Strong after a while, is kind of what I'm thinking, just from what I've been reading. That's not necessarily what I feel like from what they're presenting on TV. And I don't want to see Kushida lose the belt just yet. I feel like he just got it. Although it's been a couple of few months now, but still, I'd rather see him hold on to it a little bit longer. I like the open challenge stuff. I'm always a fan of open challenges. It's something I don't want to see all the time, but like, I really enjoy John Cena's US Open Challenge. Anytime somebody does an open challenge, they're fun and they're intriguing. It's almost like the Royal Rumble. Who's going to come out and make the challenge? So, It kind of adds a little bit of mystery and mystique to a show. And you know, personally, I like it. So I'd like to see Kushida continue some of that stuff. Although it doesn't seem like we're going to get anything like that soon. We're probably going to wind up seeing him feud with Diamond Mine for a little while here. And whether or not, you know, we do see a title switch, you know, is kind of obviously yet to be determined. But from what I'm reading, I wouldn't be surprised if we do wind up seeing, you know, Strong with the belt around his waist at some point. But maybe not. Maybe it would be Tyler Rust, you know, and I would not be opposed to that at all. You know, and maybe that could even build to some sort of like dissension between the two of them. We're getting way far down the line here because they just debuted, but, overall, I really like Diamond Mine and what they're doing. So thumbs up for me. As far as the match goes, I don't think I even touched the match. Bobby Fish, I think you hit the nail on the head where you said he's kind of oddly playing his role very well, because I think he is. When he came in tonight, it kind of came into frame backstage when they were interviewing Diamond Mine. He looked cool. Like he looked cool. He sounded cool. And he wasn't the Bobby Fish that I thought we were going to get, who kind of like almost seemed like a little bit more reserved than what we got tonight. So thumbs up for that. He obviously lost a match here tonight, but I don't think that necessarily is going to mean we're going to see, you know, him staring at the lights all the time. From what it seems like, they kind of maybe want to push him a little bit. And I think they should, considering that he was in the UE. I don't think that he's somebody that you're going to want to have in, you know, going up in the main event or anything like that, or even necessarily for the North American title. You know, maybe try for it, but I don't think necessarily hold it. But I say, you know, keep him strong and make him some sort of a gatekeeper or something like that, because I think people still get behind him being, you know, being Bobby Fish, being, you know, a former member of the UE. I think people still probably get behind him a little bit, especially if he continues, you're showing what he's shown in the past few weeks.
Fish and O'Reilly have been teammates for years, and I think an interesting dichotomy here that we wouldn't have ever guessed. You can try to be really cool, or you can just try to be yourself. It's again, I said that earlier on, but Fish is being asked to do something on a much smaller scale, and he's succeeding just because he's just working within himself. It just seems so simple, but it's wild that Fish, who does not have the talent, the kicks, the legs, the anything of Kyle O'Reilly, is just getting these organic, strong reactions because he's just a dude with a mission statement who, yes, granted, is not going against one of the most popular guys in NXT history. So there you go. As for Tyler Rust, I think probably Tyler Rust should just organically become the first simultaneous four belt holder in NXT. Just let it happen.
Yeah. You just may be a little bit biased.
Don't force it. Just let it happen organically. Okay, let's go to some emails. This is from JB from Detroit. With the former Aleister Black debuting on AEW last week and Andrade having his first match, it got me thinking, between the two, who had the greater NXT run? Between the two, who had the more Raw or SmackDown potential? Three, do you think it was in Zelina Vega's best interest to return to WWE, or would it have been better for her to join AEW to either have interaction with Andrade, her former kayfabe client, Black, her real-life husband, or both? Love the show and go be VIP. Also, do you think it's a little early to have Xia Li in the title scene? I feel like there are so many other female wrestlers who have a more deserving resume, and this angle seems rushed and out of nowhere. And where was the rest of Tian Sha, and will they factor into this story? I think it's likely some things were moved around with the sudden call-ups of Tegan, Shotzi, and Tony, but I still think they could have explained it way better. It's kind of out of nowhere, but I don't think that it's rushed. I think it's more... I think this is essentially a tryout for Xia Li, who clearly has risen her stock in a lot of ways. As for where's Tian Sha, you don't want them here for a match that she's not going to win, because she's not. This is not where the title changes hands. I don't think you want them here for this. I think you bring them back for something she's going to win. Aleister Black and Andrade, who had the greater NXT run, is a great question. Who had the more Raw SmackDown potential, I think, is Aleister Black. I think they both had massive potential, but it seems like Black was on his way to doing something extremely special. And I think with Andrade, it was always going to be an extremely good wrestler who you could – like, Andrade had a high ceiling. I think it was, I don't know, I say Orton because even though people think of Orton as a legend, I don't. I think of him as a good hand. I think he had that kind of ceiling. But I think that Black really, really had a high ceiling. I think he's the biggest miss of everybody, literally everybody, that they've gotten rid of in the last year. Who had the greater NXT run is a really good question. Black had the moments, but Andrade had an insanely good and out of nowhere good championship run, because he was losing most of the time. They even did a losing streak storyline with him, which never does any good for anyone, and they still ended up running with him as champion, having him go over Gargano, and he was champ for like 7 months, and it was strong all the way through. As for what Zelina should have done, that gets to art versus commerce. Art-wise, she had way more opportunities and options and storyline, wink, wink, nudge, opportunities in AEW, but it could be that she was offered more money by WWE, which they would have done specifically to try to woo Aleister Black back, because it sounds like they were trying to rectify that mistake. But I don't pretend to be inside. I don't know enough. I don't know as much as I want. Nate?
Yes, I don't either. But so I guess, okay, in terms of who had the greater, you know, greater run on NXT, I think I would probably agree it would be Aleister Black, Andrade rather. I really liked Aleister Black in NXT, I didn't actually watch through his title run. So that, you know, this is obviously through that lens. But I did see the majority of Andrade's title run. And I certainly liked what he brought to the table. I felt like he was special. And I almost kind of got the same type of vibes that I get from Escobar, from him. He just seemed like a good fit for that role at the time. In terms of the main roster, though, I think it was Aleister Black. And I think, like you said, he was on the cusp of doing something really cool. All of the vignettes that they were doing with him, with all of the animation and all of that stuff was fantastic. And the story that he was telling was fantastic. And then they just drop it. They just drop it out of nowhere. It was one of the things that I was looking forward to each week when I was doing the recaps for SmackDown. And I'm really surprised that they just kind of dropped the ball with it and let him go. And not only did they let him go, then they screwed up on top of it. And they basically apparently never changed his no compete clause from the traditional 30-day in NXT to 90-day when he went up to the main roster, and that's how he ended up debuting in AEW. Within a month of being let go from WWE, and it's A, baffling that happened in the first place, that they actually, there was a clerical error like that. But it's B, like, it's crazy that they let him go. He's got so much talent, so much potential that it's just unbelievable. However, I really liked his debut in AEW. I really liked the fact that his eye is all blacked out and he's wearing, he's going to do something there that's going to bring the eye in from the poking the eye out, eye for an eye match, whatever you want to call it. So that was really cool. Zelina Vega, again, like you said, I mean, I don't pretend to know, you know, be on the inside or anything like that. So it's all speculation and just kind of my own like perception and whatever. But I was really, really surprised to see her re-sign WWE, especially the way that they kicked her out. You know, and they got rid of her after she kind of brought up unionization and things like that. I was very surprised. She was vocal about her displeasure and all of that with the company. So it was really shocking to me to see her come back, especially knowing that Andrade, was now in AEW. And I think that was right before Black made his AEW debut, but it was really shocking to me that she did not go to AEW. I thought that was going to be like in the bag. I'm actually outside with the dog. What else do we have for questions in that email?
Oh, I think that you kind of covered it.
Okay,
it was
cool.
Zaya. Yeah.
Oh, this Zaya.
We kind of covered that.
So yeah, there we go.
All right, David Podnar says, sending this halfway through the show with all the call ups and new roles and characters, it feels like right after WrestleMania or SummerSlam show. Are Hit Row faces since they're going against Escobar? Mandy down in NXT scouting? At least Cameron is putting on a happy face and looking good with a new haircut. Have a good night, all. Dave Podnar from Pittsburgh. Okay, so, it does feel kind of like a reset. I can't deny that. And it kind of has felt that way for the last month or so. Are Hit Row faces? I don't know. Escobar has been in a lot of feuds where it's not clear who the face is and who the heel is, especially his feud with Cross, which seems like a fever dream that may or may not have actually occurred. Mandy being down to scout, I could get behind because I'm not looking for her to be a regular part of the show, but if she's there to be a scout, that might be interesting. And Cameron, Cameron's looking like a million bucks, folks. Kevin Catani also emails us, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I'm nothing if I'm not persistent, so the third time will have to be the charm. Kelly, go Italy. Yes, I am watching the tournament, and that'd be the story. That out of the way, I enjoyed tonight's episode. I would have liked to see more of Jiro in the tournament and wish they would have paired him with someone different, but it is what it is, I suppose. I imagine Vink is a favorite as he's been around a while. Do you think he has finals potential? Yes. Second, I imagine I'm in the minority, but I can't wait for the Loomis-Hartwell payoff. I can't either. This stuff shouldn't work, but it does. Lastly, now that Joe has officially been provoked, do you think he'll be the one to take the belt off of Cross? Thanks as always. Go VIP. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin Picatani, PhD. Do I think that he'll be the one to take the belt off Cross is the money question here. I don't know. I don't know what Joe's long term is. It's so weird that this is somebody that they would just let go for nothing, but he could still be the next NXT champion. And I don't see a lot of obvious choices for who that person is. And people say, yeah, he's gassed after a handful of things. If Joe wins the NXT championship, it's going to be in like a 5-minute match because that's the way they present it. I think they would do it much in the way they do the fights that were Brock Lesnar on top. So I think it could happen. I don't know if it will. I don't know if it should. I don't know if I want it to. I think that it would be cool, but I'm not sure it's what I'd want. I guess I'd have to experience it to find out, you know. If he was put in that match, I would be cheering unequivocally for him, so I probably would be for it. It would be interesting, and if you have to transition it to another heel, which maybe you have to do since almost everybody in NXT is a heel, I guess you could do it that way. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know what you do. I mean, you could do Cameron Grimes, which... Just do it, guys. I'm all on board for that. Or Tyler Rust, because he's got to win all the championships at the same time anyway, so you might as well get out of, one out of the way. Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, so let's see. With I'll start, I guess, with Hero. I agree. I think I would have loved to see more of Eichmann Hero in the tournament. He really, like, he got me tonight. I like him. I can't wait to see some more of him. And, I, you know, like you said, I think Bink is certainly a favorite as well. I'm also on board with the payoff for Hartwell and Loomis. I wasn't at first, but it's starting to grow on me the past few weeks. And, yeah, with Joe and I think Joe – so, okay, when we started the show tonight, Kelly, you said that you didn't think there was anybody that thought that Gargano might have any sort of chance here tonight. And I said that I did a little bit because of, you know, just rumors of Karrion Kross getting called up and things like that. So it's not necessarily storyline that was driving that thought, but just what we're hearing in the back, you know, in the background here. But it still didn't seem like Gargano should be the one to dethrone him. It didn't seem like that would really make the most sense for his character, or for the story, or for NXT in general. Samoa Joe does. Samoa Joe feels like it makes a lot of sense, and here's why. He's not only is he a former NXT champion, but I think a lot of people, even that were watching, even though he was on the main roster for so long, I think a lot of people still thought of him as like an NXT guy. I know I did. I know a lot of my friends that you know, even, I mean, they're more casual watchers than I am, obviously, but you know, even them, they kind of always thought of him as like an NXT guy. You know, once he was in the company, so. I think there is still that stigma, or not stigma, but that you know, that association there of him, you know, being down in NXT. Not only that, he's a Triple H guy. Triple H absolutely loves him, and so, you know, I could certainly see him wanting to push Samoa Joe down there as well, because Samoa Joe's legit. I mean, not only did he have an amazing run in NXT, I think he was the first time, or first two-time champion, if not the second, but I think it was the first. Not only was a two-time champion, but he made a huge name for himself in Impact. He made a huge name for himself on the Indies. He's somebody that brings a lot of credibility to NXT. And I think that if you want to get more eyes on the product, and especially if you're still trying to, I mean, it's still trying to compete with AEW, put the belt on somebody like Samoa Joe. Why not? They did it with Charlotte. They put the belt on Charlotte, women's title. Why not put it on Samoa Joe, you know, a more of a main roster guy, somebody with some more cred, some more, mainstream appeal than, you know, a lot of the guys that we do get down in NXT, I think could be good for the product. I'm not necessarily advocating for a super lengthy reign for him. And I hate saying that because we've seen so many short NXT title reigns, and I hate seeing that. I want to see long reigns, but I think Joe could be a pretty good, and again, I hate to say transitional champion, but be a good, somewhat transitional champion to get the belt off of Karrion Kross and then get onto somebody like Tyler Rust, some other big upcoming star, to then get that main event, main roster rub off of Samoa Joe.
All right, folks. I think that is it. I've got a few more notes, but I think we pretty much got there. Paul Orndorff, heads passed. So I believe that it was 1949 to 2021. A tremendous boon to the main event scene of WWF when it was rising to its hugest prominence. Hulk Hogan's got a lot to owe Paul Orndorff. I hope on some level the narcissist Hulk Hogan does understand that. I hope he does, because Orndorff helped make it. So Orndorff, a very good wrestler, very good psychology. He'd been unwell for a while, so no shocks here, but a great wrestler, Orndorff, and one that was still around and still doing his thing, but it was a little past his prime when I started watching. I started watching in 1990. He was still doing well, but the stuff he'd done that was drawing money all over the place, that was already done. So I already knew him as a legacy guy. Paul Orndorff, thank you for all your contributions to wrestling. And this one's for you. I'm Kelly Wells. Find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games, Nate.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which will probably be a little bit late tomorrow. I didn't quite finish them tonight, and I got a long day back in the office tomorrow, first day back. So I probably won't get the hits and misses posted up till later tomorrow night, but they will be posted up because, hey, I hadn't done that for a couple weeks because I had to do Kelly's report for him. But with that, I'll give it back to Kelly, and we'll see you guys next week.
All right, folks, until next week, that is, you know what? I don't have a saying that comes from until next week. So cheers, folks.